of the last half of Romans chapter 1 and see this, but we'll focus on one verse here in light of Schaeffer's Age of Fragmentation. Verse 21, although they knew God, they did not honor him or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. As Schaeffer has taken us from the church age immediately after the resurrection of Jesus Christ up through this era, really 50s, 60s, early 1900s, up to that time, you see where man untethers himself from God, and you get John Cage there, an extreme example. But you see this, you will see this played out in saner versions when you try to discuss with people morality. And you suggest to them that apart from something outside of us giving us morality, explaining to us what is right and wrong, if man begins with himself, there is no solid foundation for morality. And they'll immediately counter with, oh, you can't say, you know, I don't have morality. I said, I didn't say that. But what is your basis? From what comes this morality of right and wrong? And when you peel back that onion, you will merely find subjectivity. It's me, or it's the masses, or something, but nothing objective out there from which to hang that. And you see, so this is, you could put this verse as a subscript to that lecture. Turn also to 2 Timothy as a parallel to that, about halfway through the New Testament, 2 Timothy chapter 4. Again, Paul's last letter here, as he's writing to essentially the young man that he mentored for so many years. In verse 3, Paul writes to Timothy and tells him the time is coming when people will not endure sound teaching. Okay, they're going to shake it off. You know, it's like a bucking bronco. I will not endure this rider on my back. But having itching ears, they will accumulate for themselves teachers to suit their own passions, and will turn away from listening to the truth and wander off into myths, non-reason. As for you, always be sober-minded, endure suffering, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. It's interesting, right before that, as Paul says these things are going to happen, he gives really the antidote for goofy thinking. And it's in verse 2. Preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with complete patience and teaching. You know, we're like little beacons in a dark room, and people might not like the light. Go back to the start of chapter 3 of 2 Timothy, and that's what you're going to read, is they do not like the light. Read that in 1 John also. They hate the light. They prefer the darkness. And so if you are doing this, you are going to be hated for your declarations. This was said of me actually last night. You trot out tired, shameless arguments about transgendered people. You dehumanize them. Then you expect to be treated with humanity. You are a drooling mental invalid.
Wow. Is that on Twitter?
Facebook. Facebook. One of Solomon's friends. I'm a drooling mental invalid. Why? Because, you know, I didn't say God hates transgendered people. You know, I spoke of the struggle that many people have with, you know, sexual appetites and personal identity. Why? You know, and we have a reason. We can explain this because we live in a fallen world. As God creates us male and female for husband and wife, and the struggles that we have because of sin in our life to go away from what God had created. So when you declare the truth and to do it, and this is important, you know, to not be Westboro Baptist standing up with signs that say, God hates fags. What? God grieves. God grieves at those who stand in rebellion. His justice will come down, and that needs to grieve us. Would you not rather see the masses come to understand who God is, that they be in a right relationship with Him again? He's offering it. He's standing there with His arms open wide. And people are and worse. They're screaming. You will be hated. This is there. This is when you have nothing from which to reason, you will simply be hated for it. A couple of questions about what's going on here. Think back to the Impressionist artists that he was talking about. Is Impressionist art not beautiful? Is it ugly?
Impressionists.
So
that would be,
yeah, not
the drawing of nature.
I thought it was Monet.
Think of Monet. Yeah.
Yeah, Monet is beautiful.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, there are something. Oh, that's really pretty. That's really pretty. I mean, and understand, there are crummy artists in every genre. So they paid you for that. You know, in Dadaism. Think back to the painting Nude Descending a Staircase. Okay, A, I don't see the staircase. A, I don't see B, I don't see the nude. But that was an intriguing painting. You know, with its lines and there was even some symmetry to it. And you go, that's interesting. It's interesting.
There was.
Okay. Debussy. You know, the guy with the flute. It was kind of haunting. Because it never really came to, as he said, a resolution. There's not a, okay, good. I think of, anybody see Into the Woods? Mm-hmm. Okay, Stephen Sondheim. If you wanna go to a musical that really messes with your head, Stephen Sondheim would be at Into the Woods. I mean, he takes all the good of fairy tales and turns it upside down, and you walk out needing a shower. I mean, really, it's. Oh man, it sucks your heart out, throws it on the ground and tramples it. But most of the music in it is fragmented. It's broken. Every now and then you'll go, oh, here's a pattern. And you go, great, I can hang on to that pattern for a while. And all of a sudden it goes away. And you go, I'm lost. Into the Woods. The one song that sticks with people from that show is Agony. And it's a comedy, but it is very melodic. And it sticks with your mind. But so that, well, let me ask the next question. Why do things that are beautiful resonate with us?
Because
because it makes sense. I mean, all those things that leave you hanging and don't have finality, they don't make sense. And because...
there's harmony.
I think we're seeing God.
God was
beauty.
Yeah, he was the original creator of beauty. And so what are we seeking? We're still seeking our original beauty.
You know, if we see such wondrous, magnificent beauty within the created realm, how beautiful is God going to be?
Wow.
Because there is, I mean, we recognize beauty because God is beautiful. And his creation reflects who he is and what he is. And so beauty resonates with us. So, okay, next thing. Is beauty subjective?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yes, wow. I would, as your brain starts to cramp on you, somebody who has a skewed view of the world is not going to see beauty for what it is. Okay? There was a child in the Wolford Hall when Tracy and I were there for a month with Drew when he was a child. And the child was born with a cleft palate. Cleft palate?
And lip.
And lip, okay. So, I'd never seen that before. I'd only seen the surgeries afterwards. And the kid's mouth, he looked like an insect, kind of with these two parts here. And the mother was concerned before the surgery because she had grown to love the look of her son and his beauty. She saw the beauty that he was, in truth, and she don't know if she was a Christian, but in truth, she was seeing the image of God in her son. She saw the beauty in her son, regardless of the physical deformity that was there. So, beauty. Ah, man, is that subjective?
Most.
You know, two paintings. You know, that I would go nude descending a staircase. Oh, that's an Amy Best going, you're whacked. You know? That's an interesting discussion. I'll just leave that out there. Let me ask, though, again, is there a place for ugliness within art?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because it contrasts.
Okay.
Well, I think of the law, and I don't know why this came to my mind, but the law was given to show us our sin. And so that's ugly.
The law is ugly?
No, sin is ugly.
Okay, the sin is ugly.
So that is reality.
Yes. Are there ugly things in the Bible? Oy. Oy. Yeah, I mean there are despicable things in the Bible. There are perverse things. They go, "Ah." Man, if they made it, they can't make a movie of that. VeggieTales is actually struggling with one of the judges right now because they were trying to figure out how to show one of this little vegetable essentially turning all the grapes into grape juice. I was like, oh, yeah. They're going, it didn't go over with the initial audiences. Yeah. Now, there is ugliness in the Word of God, but it is portrayed rightly. It is portrayed rightly. And this is an important discussion. Well, how much of it do I have to see to understand it? Do I need to see a head explode? Or is it sufficient like in the old westerns where the guy just goes, oh, and you know he's dead. Okay, he just clenches his chest and falls down. Okay, how much do I have to see to understand the evil that is there? How detailed does God get? Is that different? Again, those are important discussions to have around the dinner table with our children about right and wrong and beauty and ugliness. I left one blank on there. Art became absurd in the second. Second bullet. Picasso, I mean, if you think, if your brain tries to grasp out and go, okay, let me, what artist is there that paints weird things? Picasso, if you're into art at all, probably comes to mind. But he didn't always paint that way. Didn't always draw that way. That was interesting. Why? Why?
He may have been just, like Jake says, they were more trying to make a statement.
Or his worldview changed.
Or he was just painting what he saw, where he saw beauty.
You know, I think his worldview remained, but like Cage and his mushrooms, you see the inconsistency of his worldview. It doesn't stay there. Because, she's beautiful, and I'm not going to paint her like little boxes or with one eye over here and the ear up here. You don't do that, because it's beautiful. So I'm going to paint her in all of her splendor and beauty. Because that honors her. This is the best I can do, and it doesn't do you justice. So to try and convey that. Why? And you see this throughout this film series that Schaefer argues that the artist's worldview comes out in his art. And another thing that he will argue is that the artist's worldview coming out in his art is really going to be the culture in about 7 to 10 years. But why is it that the artist's worldview comes out in his art? Why is that?
If you want to stick to the basic definition of art, it's painting out expression. Most of the time, it's the expression of the author. He could be just saying, okay, I just want to paint this, but he's going to paint it the way he sees it, or he wants to try to make a statement and say, this is what you guys look like in all of your beauty or in all of your ugliness.
I mean, what greater expression of who you are than what comes out in your art?
That's even biblical. It says what you allow in is going to come out.
Mm-hmm. Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks, the pen writes, the brush paints, the musician creates.
And he's not going to go against who he is. And so that is just logical that it would come out.
I can't do it. I'd like to end kind of with he talked about the airplane, the beauty of the airplane. And airplanes are gorgeous. Except Navy. The Navy has created some really ugly airplanes, but they still fly. But
they still fly.
Yeah, if you put enough thrust behind something, you'll get it off the ground. But this fragmentation comes out in our science as well. Neil deGrasse Tyson, anybody know who he is? He essentially took over Carl Sagan's cosmos. Okay, absolute secularist. In October 2015, just 9 months ago, he said, "Okay, if he's asking, is there a God?" He says, "If that God is described as being all powerful and all knowing and all good, I don't see evidence for it anywhere in the world. So I remain unconvinced. If that God is all powerful and all good, I don't see that when a tsunami kills 250,000 or an earthquake kills 250,000 people. I'd like to think of good as something in the interest of your health or longevity. That's a pretty simple definition of something that is good for you. That's not a controversial understanding of the word good. So if Earth, in two separate events, separated by just a couple of years, can kill 500,000 people, then if the God, as you describe, exists, that God is either not all-powerful or not all-good, and so therefore I am not convinced. Okay? Says that, he goes, there is no God. You go, okay. Business Insider just published a conference that he had where he argues that the universe is a simulation put on by an intelligent being. The article says, one of the main arguments that physicists use to talk about what's known as the simulation hypothesis is that if we can prove that it's possible to simulate a universe, if we can figure out all the laws that govern how everything works, in other words, us today, scientists are going, we understand the laws of gravity and such. Well, if we can figure that out, that makes it much more likely that it can be simulated. If we know that it's possible to do something, it's much easier to think that the thing is being done. We haven't been able to figure out how to simulate a universe yet, but it's not too hard to imagine that some other creature out there is far smarter than us. Tyson uses a thought experiment to imagine a life form that's as much smarter than us as we are than dogs, chimps, or other terrestrial animals. What would we look like to them, he says? We would be drooling, blithering idiots in their presence. Whatever that being is, it very well might be able to create a simulation of a universe. And if that's the case, it is easy for me to imagine that everything in our lives is just the creation of some other entity for their entertainment. Okay, but what is he described, really?
God.
He's described God. Okay, there's this being that could create this whole universe.
But I don't believe in it.
But I don't believe in God.
Because it's easier to believe in alien planes.
Exactly. You know, and it's interesting that he said that this alien created it for their entertainment. Okay, let's shift that a little bit. That God created the universe for his glory. God created it for his glory.
Is this the same guy, Keith, that you just said that couldn't believe in God because of the tsunamis? And
yeah.
That's the same guy.
Yeah, that's the same guy.
But he can believe in something he hasn't seen that's out there that may be smarter.
Yeah. That's fragmentation. That's fragmentation in spades, in all of it. You know, I'm not going to believe in this, but I'm going to come up with something that looks very much like it, but it's not this.
Well, because then what it does is it frees them to believe in something like